All right, good evening, everyone. So first of all, welcome back. I think this is our first post-Pesach shiur. And aptly, we're going to begin tonight a two-part series on Sefiras HaOmer. So generally, when we speak about Sefiras HaOmer, we tend to focus a little bit more on the story with Rabbi Akiva and his students, which we'll focus on more next week. But I'd like to speak about the Sefira in more of a almost like global view. So first of all, tonight's shiur is sponsored by Mr. and Mrs. Bayek in commemoration of the yard site of Sai's mother, Rebecca Bayek, Chaya Bela Bas Aaron Dov Zichron Livracha, and we hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, her neshama will have an aliyah. All right, so begin with number one, which amazingly enough is from last week's parsha. So the Torah says, Vaydaber Shal Moshe Leimar, Daber al B'nei Yisrael V'mar Talev. Speak to the Jewish people and say the following. Ki Savou El Ha'aretz Asher Anino Sein Lachem. When you will come to Eretz Yisrael, Uktzartem es ktsira vehevesem es omer reishis ktsirchem elakoin. You will go ahead, uktzartem es ktsira. You will reap the harvest, and you will bring in omer. Now the word omer itself is what? Is a measure, right? Omer is a measurement. Like we have a sa'ah, right? We have a kizayis, you have an omer. So omer, so refers to the measurement. That's the amount of grain that is actually brought. And you will bring the omer, you will wave it before God. And here the Torah tells us when it is happening. On the day after Shabbos. Day after Shabbos he refers to Pesach. Okay, we're not going to get into exactly how we know that Shabbos means Pesach as opposed to Shabbos. We'll save that for a different time. And you will go ahead. And the Torah explains that when you bring this carbon omer, which we know again, what kind of grain is this? What type of grain? Barley, because interestingly enough, as we know, we'll discuss this further later on, the actual wheat harvest doesn't occur until the Yom Tov of Shavuos. The first grain to mature is barley, and it comes about on Pesach. So Torah says when you're bringing this Omer, you're not just simply bringing the Omer, but rather you're bringing other karbanos along with it. And here's the interesting halachic ramification. V'lechem v'kali v'charmel lo sochlu ad etzah yom hazeh. And the Torah goes out of its way to explain the prohibition of Chadash. Namely, you are not permitted to go ahead and eat any other of the new grains. When we say new grains, that refers to grains that took root after last Pesach. You may not eat any of the Chadash, any of the new grain, until after you bring the carbon omer. Okay, so here the Torah focuses on Pasuk Tes until Pasuk Tes Vav. Torah focuses on the halachos concerning the carbon omer. But now in Pasuk Tes Vav there's a transition. Usfartem lachem imacharas haShabbos miyom aviyachem es omer hatinufa sheva shabbosos timimos tihyena. And now the Torah tells us, after telling us the details of the karban haomer, the Torah teaches us about sfiras haomer. And on the day that you bring this omer, you will begin to count 7 complete weeks. Ad mimacharas haShabbos haShviis tisperu chamishim yom vekraftem mincha chadasha laHashem. And from Machras HaShabbos, on the second day of Pesach, when you bring the Karban HaOmer, you will begin this count, and this count ultimately will take you until day 50. Day 50, which of course is Shavuos, right? And on that day, you will bring a Mincha Chadasha LaHashem. You will bring a Mincha, a meal offering, Chadasha, new, which is a reference to what? To the new wheat crop that will come in, and you will bring this all for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, that's the section. What's the problem? What's the fundamental question you have looking at this? Remember, pretend this is the first time you ever heard of these ideas. You're looking at this. Torah, what did Torah told you? Just 2 things. Number one, you have to bring a carbon to Omer. Fine. Number two, you have to count. What's the problem? Why are we counting? Why are we counting? Interesting if Torah tells me that I begin this count on the day that I bring the Omer Macharas HaShabbos, and the Torah tells me that the count will end on the 50th day. But the Torah does not tell me why I am counting, what I am counting, where I know that I'm counting towards the 50th day, but first of all, what is the significance of the 50th day, which of course is not explicitly spelled out in the Torah. Remember, the Torah, when it discusses the Yom Tov of Shavuos, there are sheets right in back. The Torah, when discussing the Yom Tov of Shavuos, the Torah, when discussing Yom Tov of Shavuos, really only discusses it through the lens of an agricultural event. Doesn't really talk about all that much of Matan Torah, at least in Parashas Emor. So the fundamental question I'd like to try to explore tonight is, what is the meaning, what is the significance of this count? Why are we counting, and ultimately, what are we counting towards? So we'll develop a couple of different approaches, and then what we'll try to do is, by the end of the evening, really merge these multiple approaches into one cohesive approach. So take a look at number two. Writes the Sefer HaChinuch. Mishroshei HaMitzvah Atzad HaPshat. Says the Sefer HaChinuch. So what's the essence of this mitzvah Atzad HaPshat, according to the basic meaning? What's the essence of the Jewish people? Torah. You know, it's interesting, it's very apropos, being that we just celebrated Yom HaAtzmaut, right, this past week. So interestingly enough, when Zionism first started becoming a movement, much of the negative backlash towards Zionism was because there was a perception that people were going to define their Judaism based on the concept of Zion, based on the concept of Israel. Now that's very dangerous. Why? Why? Because it says our identity is not rooted in Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is a very important part of who and what we are, but it is not the be-all, end-all of the Jewish people. V'haraya, we existed 2,000 years without having the opportunity or ability to be one with the land. I quoted, I think, a couple of years ago, we spoke about Rav Kook, where Rav Kook discusses this idea where the Torah was given in the Midbar. And part of the reason the Torah was given in the Midbar is to show that the Jewish people could thrive without having an address. Is it beautiful to have an address? Of course. Everybody wants a home. And everybody wants a homeland. But that is not an integral part for us to be who we are. It bolsters, it magnifies, it amplifies our identity. So says the Sefer HaChinuch, so what is the essence of the Jewish people? So what makes us us? And the answer is Torah. Torah. Torah is the one defining character trait, characteristic of the Jewish people. Umipnei HaTorah, Nivru Shamayim Ve'aretz V'Yisrael. And the truth is, we believe that Torah is not only significant for the Jewish people, but we actually believe that the only reason the universe is in existence is for Torah. Now, what that means, how that actually plays out, we'll see for a different shir. V'hiya ikir v'hasiba shenigul v'yatzim mitzrayim, kedei she'ekablu HaTorah b'Sinai v'kaimua. Similarly, we know that why were the Jewish people redeemed from Egypt? Redemption from Egypt was not an ends, it was a means. A means to get to Har Sinai and see, get the Torah. By the way, which of course is the incredible kasha, the fundamental question on Dayenu, right? Because Dayenu makes it sound like it would have been enough HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't take us to Har Sinai, which is not true, but like I said, we'll leave that for next year. Ukimoshu Amar Hashem Lemoshe, V'zelecha Oz Ki Anochi Shlachticha, Ba'otzi'acha Es Ha'am, Mimitraim Ta'avdun Es Ha'elokim Ala Harazeh. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu tries to inspire Moshe Rabbeinu about the mission, about the vision, about the destiny, what he says to Moshe is, I'm going to give you a sign that you're going to be successful, that you're going to lead the people out of Egypt, and you are going to worship me on this mountain. This mountain being a reference to Har Sinai. See, even then HaKadosh Baruch Hu, from the beginning, the plan was always not simply get us out of Egypt, it was get us to Har Sinai. But a prerequisite to getting to Har Sinai was, of course, what? Getting out of Mitzrayim. So he goes on. Alright, let's skip a little bit. Skip two lines. And the truth is, Kabbalah's HaTorah, the Sinaitic experience, receiving the Torah at Har Sinai, is even more important than the Exodus. Because the Exodus was the means, but the Sinaitic revelation was the ends. Okay, so let's skip to letter Beis. And if this is the case, that Torah is the be-all, end-all of the Jewish people, which is an indisputable fact. Ki hu kol ikaron shel Yisrael, uba'avura nigalu. It's the essence of the Jewish people, and the reception of the Torah was the one reason that we were redeemed from Egypt. Va'olu l'chol ha'gdula sh'alu eleha, nitztavinu limnos mimacharas yom tov shel Pesach ad yom nesinas ha'Torah, laharos b'nafshenu hachifetz hagodol el hayom hanichbad hanichsaf lelibenu. So the Sefer HaChinuch espouses, which is probably the most well-known approach to Siras HaOmer. Why are we counting? Says the Sefer HaChinuch, it's a countdown. It's a countdown to what?
Kabbalah Satorah. So we leave Egypt, we have Pesach, and immediately upon leaving Egypt, what do? We begin to count the days toward the Sinaitic revelation, and that countdown demonstrates what? That the entire essence of Exodus was for what purpose? To get us to Har Sinai. That's the entire essence of the sphere. We count down to Matan Torah, or we count up to Matan Torah, right, however you want to phrase it, we count towards the Sinaitic revelation to show that this is the essence of our Exodus. Leaving Egypt is a means to get us to Har Sinai. And he goes on, Ke'eved, Zaharos b'nafshinu achevet agadu al ayom hanichbad, hanichsaf l'libeinu. And by counting, what we demonstrate is there is an incredibly, there's a tangible eagerness to get to this day. It's like whenever you're anticipating something exciting, something wonderful, you cross off the days on your calendar to show so many days have gone by, only a small number of days left, and we eagerly anticipate the arrival of Kabbalah Satorah. Ke'eved yish aftzel, v'yin net hamid masa yavo ha'eis ha'nechtzav, elav she'etzadcher, it's just like a servant who knows that he's going to be freed on a particular day. What does he do? He counts down the days until he knows that his emancipation is going to come. Okay, so according to the Sefer HaChinuch, we'll pause here for just a moment. According to the Sefer HaChinuch, although the Torah does not state this explicitly, he understands this to be the reason for the Sfira. It's to show that Yitzias Yisrael is not the end, it's the beginning. It's the means to Kabbalah Satorah. And how do we show that? By immediately beginning the count towards Matan Torah upon leaving Egypt. See, he points out in letter Gimel, V'zehu sha'anu monin la'omer, kilomar kach ve'kach yomim avru min aminyon, the ayin anu monin kach ve'kach yomim yishlan alizman. So okay, he goes into here why we count the number of days that have elapsed, as opposed to the number of days that are remaining. See, he gives an interesting answer. He says, because the truth is, if you go ahead and you begin by saying there are 49 days left of the Omer, the Sefer HaChinuch posits that that's depressing, because it sounds like Shavuos is too far away. Right? So instead, we just count the number of days that have elapsed. And then he says, well, so why don't we shift the count and then count down the number of days left? Because we're not going to switch the manner of the count in the middle. Okay, but skip a little bit. He says the following. Letter Hey. V'in Tishal. So here he asks a very interesting question. He says, if that's the case, that the entire essence of the Sfira is to show that the Exodus is not an ends, but it's a means to get us to Kabbalah Satorah, then when should we really begin counting? On the first day of Pesach. Right? Why do we, if that's the entire essence, that we don't want anyone to erroneously think that emancipation from Egypt is the ends, why don't we start counting towards Shavuos again from the first day of Pesach? And the Sefer HaChinuch writes in letter Hey the following idea. He says, Hatshuva, the end of the first line, Hatshuva, Ki hayom harishon nisyachet kulo lahaskaras hanes hagadol v'yitzias Yisrael. And he says, because the Exodus deserves center stage a little bit as well. That as much as it's not an ends, as much as it is a means, it is such an incredible, seminal, pivotal event that it deserves its own time center stage. So therefore, what do? We celebrate Pesach as Pesach, without anything else, on day number one. But immediately upon day number two, or really night number two, we don't waste any time, we begin counting towards Shavuos again to highlight the central idea that Egyptian Exodus was not an end, but rather only a means. But there's one fundamental problem. Well, actually, look at letter Vav. V'ein lomar hayom kach v'kach yomim liyom sheni shel Pesach. Now, well, if I were to stop here, what's the problem with the Sefer HaChinuch? What's the problem? Not problem. What's the question you have when you learn this? Alright, so the truth is there's a classic question that comes to Sira Omer, why don't we keep two counts? Right? Just good. Alright, that's a halachic question. We'll hold on to that. Good. Excellent. So here's the problem with the Sefer HaChinuch. The Torah in number one is quite explicit in linking the count to the Karban. In linking the count to the Karban, which seems to be, and not just as a starting point, but that somehow the identity of the count, right, we call it what? We call it Sfiras HaOmer. So we don't call it like Sfiras Kabbalah Satorah or Sfiras Matan Torah. We call it Sfiras HaOmer. So clearly, again, there's some element of the count that must be firmly rooted and embedded in the Karban. And the Sefer HaChinuch doesn't really play up that idea. He really links it in Shavuos. Now, in all fairness, in letter Vav, what he does say is the following. V'ein lomar hayom kach v'kach yomim l'yom sheni shapesach. So why do we have to speak about the Omer at all? Carbon Omer at all? Why don't we just say, it's so-and-so number of days from the second day of Pesach. So says the Sefer HaChinuch, because it doesn't make sense. When you begin a count, you always begin from what?
One.
From a beginning of something. So to begin a count from the second day of Pesach, says the Sefer HaChinuch, it's not the way you count. So instead, what we do is we link it to the event that occurs on the second day of Pesach. And the truth is, interestingly enough, he writes over here, "V'hu karban ha'omer." So what occurs on the second day of Pesach? Karban ha'omer. "Shu karban nechbad, shebo zecher, she'anu ma'aminin, ki Hashem baruch hu ba'ashkachasu al b'nei Adam, rotze la'achayosam, u'mechadishlem b'chol shana, v'shana zar tzvoz la'achayosbo." And the truth is, what does the karban ha'omer teach us? That God is in control of everything in this world, even the grain that grows from the ground. The problem with the Sefer HaChinuch is that last piece seems like a little bit of like a kvetch in. That's not his theme. That's not his topic, right? He's not explicitly linking the count to the carbon. Michael, you know what? Just give Aram against a sheet from the back. Thank you. Okay. So here's the problem that we end off with. Thank you. Here's the problem we end off with the Sefer HaChinuch. Is now we have an incredible insight into the count. The count teaches us that what? According to Sefer HaChinuch, what's the essence of the count? Kabbalah Satorah. To teach us that Yitzias Mitzrayim was not an end, but rather a means to get us to Kabbalah Satorah. So why don't we begin counting on day number one of Pesach? Pesach deserves its own recognition. It should get its own day. The problem we're left with from the Sefer HaChinuch is that he doesn't seem to really place emphasis on the central role of the carbon / agricultural process that is unfolding on this time of year. And in fact, interestingly enough, you saw the Pesukim in number one, but if you look at number four, the Torah in Devarim also again goes out of its way to link the sphira, to link the counting with the agricultural events of the season. So number four, what does the Torah say? Shiva Shavuos Tisparlach. You will count for yourselves 7 weeks when? Me'achel Chermesh Bakama. From the time that the sickle is first put to the standing crop, Tachel Lispar Shiva Shavuos. You will begin to count 7 weeks. So it's clear that what is God doing? What is God explicitly doing? What is God doing? He is linking the count with the agricultural process of the bringing of the Omer. So as wonderful and as incredible as the Sefer HaChinuch is, we're left reaching a little bit to find something, to find an approach that is a little bit more agriculturally oriented, because that would seem to fit a little bit better into the text. And that leads us to number five. Comes along the Chizkuni. And the Chizkuni says the following: "Usfartim lechemim acharas haShabbos." Interesting approach as well. Al yidein sheshiva shavuos elu bein shnei rashi zmanim shel ketzir seorim v'shel ketzir chitin shemitzvos shmita nohagisma. So remember, we have two ends. Pesach represents the beginning of the barley harvest season, and Shavuos represents what? The beginning of wheat harvest. So these represent the two major agricultural peaks throughout the year. Interestingly enough, says the Chizkuni, they also represent the two major crops that are governed by the laws of Shemitah. Specifically, the two major crops that have to remain fallow during the sabbatical year. So he goes on, ulefichach davar gadol talui b'minyanim kidei talui b'minyanim. Kedei liyoso dugma v'zikaron, kishem she'anu monin yomei v'shavuei, ula'achar ha'shabes ha'shviyas anu mekachim es yom ha'chamishim, kach anu tzrichim lasos b'shmita v'yovel. So the Chizkuni gives a fascinating insight. The Chizkuni says, you know what the entire point of the count is? Let's take a step back. Shmita occurs how often? Once every 7 years, right? What's the danger of something that occurs once every 7 years? You're just totally unfamiliar with it. Totally unfamiliar with it. And even if you remember to do it in the particular year, you're rusty. So says Chizkuni, what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? he built in a sabbatical reminder into each year. And how did he do that? With the period of time between Pesach and Shavuos. Because what happens at Shavuos? What do? You count what? You count 7 weeks, 49 days, and then on the 50th day, right, what happens? You have a Yom Tov. That is supposed to symbolize a Shemitah process. You count 7 years, or it could also, it's Shemitah slash Yovel, right? You count 7 years, and then on the 49th, 50th day, you have a Yom Tov. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu builds in a Shemitah reminder into the yearly agricultural process. And he goes on and he says, so what we do between Pesach and Shavuos, the counting, as well as 7 days, 7 weeks representing 7 years, the fact that the 50th day is Kadosh is supposed to be a Shemitah slash Yovel reminder. And the Chizkuni says, why is it important for us to have a yearly reminder about Shemitah? Because violation of Shemitah carries with it a very severe penalty, or very severe penalties. And therefore, it is exceptionally important that Shemitah always remains front and center in the Jewish consciousness. And the way we do that is by having this almost like mini Shemitah. Obviously, the laws of Shemitah don't apply during this time, but the concept of counting 7 and a 49 and a 50th resemble that Shemitah and Yovel model, and that's the reminder. Take a look at number 6. We just won't. What's the problem? I'm sorry? What doesn't work? There were periods of time they didn't keep it, but there were also periods of time where they did keep it. Okay. So what's your point? Besides bashing the Jewish people. Yeah. Okay, so all right, so okay, it didn't work. All right, doesn't mean it's not a good idea, even if it doesn't work. What's the problem with this approach? Right, besides the fact that it didn't work, we'll leave that on the side. What's the problem? Right, correct, it did work, I did work. Regina was kidding. Yes, you are, I'm telling you, you are, right? So what's the problem? What's the problem with the Chizkuni? What's the problem? Say that once more.
Like in Eretz Yisrael, the Shemitah year was 2 years ago, and we're 7 weeks, and we're not in the Shemitah year now, so
okay, well that you can say it's just a reminder, even if you're not in the Shemitah year. But good. What else?
Take into account the wheat and the barn. I mean, the idea of wheat and barn.
Okay, or let me say it a little bit differently. It doesn't take into account the identities of Pesach and Shavuos. You see, remember the problem that we had with the Sefer Achinuch was what? He didn't take into account the agriculture, or at least really didn't place emphasis on the agriculture. So the Chizkuni has swung in the other direction, places all the emphasis on the agriculture, and doesn't really tell us exactly how this fits into the Pesach Shavuos. So why is this now? So let's count 7 weeks some other time of the year. Right? Okay, it happens to work out well that there's 7 weeks between Pesach and Shavuos, but if that's the idea of a Zecher, you could do another count throughout the year. So just like the Sefer HaChinuch didn't focus on the agriculture, the Chizkuni seems not to be focusing on the identity or connection that the count creates between Pesach and Shavuos. And in fact, if you look at number 6, the Toldos Yitzchak, and you have biographies here for everyone. So the Toldos Yitzchak writes a similar idea. He says, or you'll see why I say similar. It's different, but it's similar. Usfartam lechemi macharas haShabbos is something amazing. So why do we have this count? You're going to love this. Hatam shetziva HaKadosh Baruch Hu list baras haOmer. Why did God tell us to count the Omer? Mipnei shekol ish Yisrael Hayasuk Bikitsir Shalom. Because remember, this was a very busy time of year. For the farmer, this was the equivalent of the farmer's tax season. Right? For the farmer, tax season is to the accountant, this was to the farmer. This was the busiest time of year. And therefore, the Chol Echad Bigrano, Mifurazim, everybody's busy in their silo, busy in their field, and what could happen? The Yishkechu Aliyasam L'Regel. And they could get so involved in all of their agricultural work that what may they forget? They may forget, be Ola Regel when? For Shavuos. for Shavuos. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu orders the farmer during his busy season to go ahead and begin a count in order that he won't forget about the Yom Tov of Shavuos. So the common denominator between the Chizkuni and the Toldos Yitzchak is they are both very agriculturally centric. They're both very focused on the fact that this is the harvest season. The Chizkuni goes with the fact that it becomes a model for reminding us of Shemitah. The Toldos Yitzchak says the count is to remind the farmer, don't forget about Shavuos, no matter how busy you get. But again, after these two approaches, which are both very rooted in the agriculture, but seem to ignore the identity of the bookends, seem to ignore the beginning with Pesach and the end of or the ending of the count with Shavuos. So the question we're left with is there some way to synthesize these two approaches? Is there some way to take the identity piece, which the Sefer HaChinuch so beautifully develops, and merge it with the agricultural identity of the Chizkuni and the Toldos Yitzchak? I think the answer to that is yes. Take a look at number 7. So this is from, I have to thank Dr. Neil Weissman for this. He gave me a beautiful Sefer called Yoducha Ra'ayonai, written by Rav David Bigman. Rav David Bigman is the Rosh Yeshiva of the Yeshivat Hezder Ma'ale Gilboa, and he wrote a number of essays, just on the exceptionally philosophic essays on the Parshios. And they're really, I mean, each one of them is a masterpiece in and of itself. See, he discusses in Parshios Emor a little bit about the Sfira. So let's read this. We're actually going to draw on two pieces of his. So number 7, he says the following. Behasim l'tchila sakotzir ba'os ha'shana, kach ola gam mina machvila b'sefer dvarim, shiva shavuos tispar lach me'achel chermesh b'kama. So Rav Bigman actually is focused on something a little bit different, which is he's intrigued by the fact that the Torah, when it discusses the Karban HaOmer, and for that matter the Sfira, doesn't give us a calendar date. Right? Why doesn't the Torah just say, you should bring the Omer, and you should begin the count when? On Tes Zayin Nisan. Just give us a date. Torah gives us a date for every other Yom Tov. Why do you have to phrase it Mimacharas HaShabbos? Which, by the way, remember, we know, also creates massive confusion. Because we know, for example, those sects of Jews that did not subscribe to the oral law, when did they begin counting Sfira? Literally, the Shabbos after Pesach. The Shabbos after Pesach. And the truth is, look, I mean, I'm not agreeing with it, obviously, but the truth is, when you read the text, it textually seems to be accurate. So look what he writes over here. He says, furthermore, and he quotes the pasuk from Devarim, Torah goes out of its way to link it to the agriculture. Shiva Shavuos Tisparlach Me'achel Achemish Bakama Kol Shana V'Yevula Kol Shana V'Eis Ketzira Ulefichach Ein Tarich Kavua Bo Yesh L'Kayim Es HaMitzvah. So Rav Bigman suggests the following, that what the Torah is doing by Dafka not giving us a date, but instead focusing on Pesach and linking it to agriculture, is telling us that somehow the identity of this count is rooted both in Pesach as well as in agriculture. Meaning, had the Torah given us a date, we perhaps might have ignored its connection to Pesach and its connection to agriculture. By not giving it a date, and instead identifying it again as Mimachras HaShabbos, linking it to Pesach, and Me'achel Chemish Bekama, linking it to agriculture, the Torah says, because this is the identity of the Sfira. Now, what does that mean? Listen to this. Karban HaOmer, V'chag HaKotzir, K'shurim B'mahusam La'avodas HaAdama. So the Karban HaOmer, the Yom Tov of Shavuos, are linked by definition to agriculture, are linked to the Avodas HaAdama. HaOmer Mitzayin Es Tchilas HaKatzir. Remember, the Omer represents what? The beginning of the harvest, the beginning of the agricultural yield. Kishutum Chamishim Yomim Melacha Mistayim HaKatzir B'Selos Umikrav Karbet Shtei Alechem Mechag HaShavuos. And ultimately, when does the agricultural work end, or when does the harvest end? It ends on Shavuos. That's why on Shavuos you have a very unique carbon called the Shtei Alechem, the two loaves, right? Which are not the two loaves themselves, are not actually given on the Mizbeach, but they're part of the entire sacrificial process. Chag HaPesach, look at these last two lines. Chag HaPesach, Lu'umas Zos, Hu Chag Asher Madgish Es Hevui Hamireh. So listen to this, and we'll explore what this means in just a moment. So he says, if the Omer and Shavuos are about agriculture, Pesach is about a lifestyle of Mir'eh. Mir'eh means what? Pasture. Pasture. We'll define that in just a moment. Dine ha-Pesach nismachim ba-ofen kavua lidinim ha-kshurim b'hem latos. So a lot of the halachos of Pesach are often juxtaposed to the halachos concerning newborn animals. Hamistaimos in Boha Aviv, that ultimately is a process that is concluded with the arrival of spring. Now, what is he talking about? So I want to tell you something. You know, the beauty of Torah is it has so many levels. And if you are asleep at the wheel of your learning, you will not pick up on the nuances. And I have to say, Schatani Maskir, until I saw Caesar Abdimian, I never understood this. So I'm going to show you a couple of things. We're going to run through a couple of sources. Look at number 9. So Torah says in Shmos, Es Chaga Matzos Tishma, you have to keep Pesach. Okay? And in Pasuk 19, Pasuk Kites, what does the Torah say? V'chol Petarechem. Speaks about firstborn animals. We discuss Pesach, then we discuss firstborn animals. In number 9, which is, I did a little bit out of chronological order over here. In number 9, which is an earlier section of Shmos, 20 chapters earlier, Torah says, Kadesh li kol b'char petal karechem b'bnei shabadam b'behema. Torah again speaks about what? Firstborn animals. And a couple of psukim, 4 psukim later, what does it say? Shivas yomim tocha matzos. Pesach. Number 10, Chumash Vayikra. In Perek Chav Gimel, the Torah says, Shor o kesev o eis kiva. This is from last week's parasha. Newborn animals. And just a couple of psukim later, what does the Torah say? Bachodesh ishu ba'abasa lachodesh ben abayim Pesach. Number 12, you see where I'm going with this, right? Number 12, the Torah says in Chumash Devarim, Kol ha-bechor asher yivaleid, bivkarcha bitzoncha, right? Newborn animals. And in number 13, just a couple of psukim later, or a little bit later, actually a parak later, Shomor es chodesh ha-aviv asisa Pesach. So constant juxtaposition between the Yom Tov of Pesach and newborn animals. Why? So the truth is, the simple answer is why? Because the whole concept of Bechor, the whole concept of this idea of Petarchem, really comes as a result of Makas Bechoros, which is the concluding act. So that's conventional wisdom. But your Bigman says something amazing. Something absolutely amazing. Take a look at number 14. I'm sorry? Karpesach, true also, but Karpesach doesn't speak of Bechor, because it speaks of animals. Right? True. Look at number 14, and this is exceptionally profound. Writes Rav Bigman, Af shebemabat rishon, niros haparshios minutako zumizu. So, if at first glance, the truth is, there doesn't seem to be that much of a connection between the concept of Pesach and the concept of newborn animals. But he says something amazing. Hasmichos ha-kovis romezes al-kesh ha-bineh. So the truth is, you know, if you saw the juxtaposition one time, that would be one thing. But if you see it no less than 1, 2, 3, 4 times, there's actually 3 more that I didn't put on the sheet, right? We'll round it out at 7 times. If you see juxtaposition, sometimes something's going on. So listen to this. Hayisod hamishutav lemitzos Pesach ulakdoshos habechoros huzman kiyum hamitzvah Tukufas Ha'aviv. He says, you know why the laws of firstborn animals are always taught in conjunction or in juxtaposition to Pesach? Because that's when animals are born. He said, most of these animals the Torah speaks about give birth either over the course of the winter or towards the end of the winter. Hamlatos ha'achronos be'edre hatzon misrachashos b'shilhi ha'choref. The sheep, for example, give birth to their young at the conclusion of the winter. The im bo ha'aviv kol ha'bechoros shenoldu ru'uyim lakdesha. So therefore what that means is, if the animals have essentially been giving birth over the course of the winter, at the end of the winter, then by the time spring rolls around, the animals are ready for what? For sanctification purposes. So whether that's the Bechor, whatever, the Bechor animal, whatever you need to do for those animals in a, we'll call it in a sacrificial sense, in a giving over to the Kohen sense, they're all ready for it by the time springtime rolls around. The Matni Lechach, Nechgaga Pesach Bechodesh Ha'aviv. What is Pesach? Pesach is the Yom Tov of the spring. HaTorah Kosheres Es HaPesach, Leonas Hamotos. So Rav Digman makes an amazing suggestion. He says the Torah dafka creates a link between what? Between the Chag Ha'aviv and the natural livestock cycle. That when are the animals, now ready for whatever their Bechor status means for them? By the time the spring rolls around. Why spring? Because the mothers have given birth over the course of the winter. The final, I don't know what you call the babies, little animals, right? The final babelach, right? The little, whatever, the little sheep and the little, I'm sorry? Shechlach, right? The little lambs, okay, right? Whatever, the little animals. So now they're ready, and they're mature enough for whatever. By the way, what that means is you could give them as karbanos. If it's a bechor, you'd be able to go ahead and give it to the kohen. But by the time the spring rolls around, those animals now are ready for any kind of sacrificial rite or any kind of temple service that may be necessary of them. So therefore, again, the Yom Tov that occurs in the spring, the Chodesh, the Chag Aviv Pesach, is always juxtaposed to the laws concerning firstborn animals. Okay, so very interesting, fascinating, but you'll excuse me, who cares? Like, it's fine. So all you've told me is, Pesach is in the spring, animals are young in the spring, and therefore the two laws are juxtaposed to each other. That's nice, but there still has to be some additional dimension of understanding. Let's take a look at number 15. Right, throughout the year. Correct, throughout the year, 100%. So look at number 15, and this, I'm telling you, is going to forever change your conception of these ideas. He says the following. Rayas Tzon, Mivatas Zeka Amuka L'dar HaAvos. So the truth is, it's an amazing thing. I remember when about 8 years ago we did a mission. We did a trip from the shul to Eretz Yisrael, and we went to a place in the north. I think it's called Kfar Kedem, where it's like a biblical village where they reenact everything. So I remember, you know, they make you get dressed up in all the biblical wear. It's Kfar Kedem. It is Kfar Kedem. So we're standing there. It's fine baking our own laugh. Wonderful. I was having a great time. Suddenly the guide comes up from before me, and he puts a lamb on my shoulders. And he says, quick, give me your hands. He held the front legs, the back legs, and he said, you have to know this. He said, because all of our great leaders all began as shepherds. I said, thanks a lot. You can take the lamb off now, right? I'll settle for a shawarma, we'll call it even, right? So says Rav Digman so profoundly that shepherding has a very strong connection to our avos. And by the way, it's not just avos. It's not just Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Right? Who else? It's Moshe Rabbeinu. Before we go, right? Moshe Rabbeinu. It's David HaMelech. It's even Shlomo HaMelech. I mean, there's something about shepherding. Because what's the chap with shepherding? I don't know, but they say, right, about shepherding is you have a lot of sheep, right? And what happens? You have to get them all to a particular place. But what's the problem? Not everybody wants to go in the same direction, right? And not everybody wants to move at the same pace. And not every sheep wants to be in the back, and they want to be here, and they want to be there. It's an incredible metaphor for Jewish people, right? Not everybody wants to go in the same direction. Not everybody wants to go at the same pace. Why is he up front? Why am I in back? Right? And what's the job of the shepherd? The job of the shepherd is to deliver the flock. You need to get the flock to the point of destination, to the finish line. And so it's not an accident that all of the leaders who are critical for the solidification of Klal Yisrael's identity all began as shepherds. Because if you could figure out how to get all of the sheep to you stand a better chance at being able to influence people and get them to go where you need them to go. So listen to this. He says, this is from Parshas Vayigash, right? When the brothers go ahead and introduce themselves to Paro, they introduce themselves as shepherds. But they don't just say, we're shepherds, right? They say, gamanachnu, right? We're shepherds, kamavoseinu. And this is the line of work that our fathers were in. Ubekach mudgeshes gam nivdalusa min ha-mitzrim. Interestingly enough, not only that, but shepherding was also a way that we distinguished ourselves. Because remember, in Egypt, they looked down at shepherds because remember, in Egypt, the lamb was deified, the sheep was deified. So shepherding, that was, so it, not only was it the malacha, not only was it the work, not the work is the wrong word, the Okay, the work of our forefathers, but it also was a way in which we were distinguished from the Egyptians around us. Kiso avas the time koroitzen kach hofech chag haPesach lechag hamezuha beofen miyuchad im kahal haroim. So interestingly enough, Rav Bigman wants to suggest that the Yom Tov of Pesach, because it is the Chag Ha'aviv, because it is the Yom Tov that falls out when the flock is birthing, when the flock is giving birth to the babies, becomes almost the Yom Tov that is identified with shepherding. It's the shepherd's Yom Tov because it's the time that managing the flock becomes an incredible, incredible avoda. Hamisparchim b'tekufa zu b'vlados chadashim v'roam atzmam kimamshichi darkam shalavos. And now the model that he's trying to paint is that shepherding is not simply something you do because it's a good line of work. There's something about that connection of shepherding that it was somehow necessary for our avos, for all of our great leaders, to solidify their identities and to help solidify the identity of their future flock by going through this process. So Pesach, therefore, more than any other yom tov, the Chag Ha'aviv, is closely related to the shepherd's life because it's the time of the birthing of the flock. Okay, look at letter B. Misuras Torah Shebal Peh Kava Asakravas HaOmer B'Sochag HaPesach B'Yom Tezayin B'Nisan Zman Ze Makdim B'Mispar Shavuos Esimei HaKotzir V'Nimtza Eifo Ki Ashaychus L'Chag HaKotzir Me'uletzes Im Kain Matam Hismichu Chachalim Es Havaas HaOmer L'Chag HaPesach. See, here's what's interesting, says Rav Bigman. So if we go with this model, we seem to end up with a little bit of a contradiction. Because on one hand, Pesach has now become for us, what, the Yom Tov of who? The Yom Tov of the shepherds. Right? The Chag Ha'aviv is the time when the flock is coming into full bloom. And yet the Karban Ha'omer represents what?
Agriculture.
And not only that, but the Karban HaOmer, also remember, is not really at the beginning of it. I mean, it's the beginning of the harvest season. The only thing you could possibly harvest at that time during the year is barley. Nothing else is ready. The grains are not ready. The fruits from the tree are not ready. So the question then becomes, why are we inserting this agricultural piece into the Yom Tov of the shepherds? So look at letter C, and this is so profound. Nidme. So the truth is, we emerge with a totally different understanding of the Yomim Tovim. Essentially, by juxtaposing the Yom Tov of Pesach to the Karban HaOmer. So what are we doing in essence? We are juxtaposing these two different ways of life. So we've taken Pesach, which represents shepherding, and we are juxtaposing it to the Karban HaOmer, which represents agriculture. Okay? So look at this. Kach notrim shiluv v'chibur ben zohuso ha-historis shel ha'am Kimishpachas roetzon, ubinzo huso hachadosha, sheniknisa im haknisa laorets, vinasa biknafeha es besuras avodas haadama. See, here's what's amazing, says Rav Bigman. So essentially, what we have is the following. The Yom Tov of Pesach, which represents shepherding, really represents what? Our past. Right? Because the future was not in shepherding. What was the future in? Agriculture. Because shepherding works beautifully when what? We don't have a land. Why? Because in order to shepherd, again, this is all just based on my understanding of shepherding. If any of this turns out to be factually inaccurate, you'll let me know. Right? But again, what's the whole chap with shepherding? If you have a flock, what do you have to do? Right? You have to keep moving. Right, because ultimately you need pasture land, and the sheep, the goats, whatever are going to eat up all you have. So shepherding works beautifully when you have a nomadic lifestyle. So, for example, it worked beautifully with Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov because Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov, the strange part is they didn't have a land. Well, it's kind of they had both. On one hand, they had the title to a land, but they didn't actually have unrestricted usage of that land. They had spiritual ownership, but did not have physical possession. So the avos, therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu, therefore, is what? They're nomadic, and therefore they're shepherds. But that's not our future. Our future is what? We're going to Eretz Yisrael. And what's going to happen to Eretz Yisrael? It's our land. So if it's our land, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to settle down. I'm going to build a house. But then what am I going to do? I can't be a shepherd. I mean, obviously, there will always be shepherds, right? But interestingly enough, where were the shepherding lands in biblical Israel? Transjordanian lands. Right, they were the lands me'evelanar. They were the lands not in Eretz Yisrael proper. They were Eretz Yisrael annex. Amazingly enough, that in Eretz Yisrael proper, it was farming. It was agriculture. So Rabbi makes an amazing suggestion. He says the juxtaposition is so profound. You have Pesach, the shepherding Yom Tov, which represents our past, and you have the Karban HaOmer, which is the transition to agriculture, which represents our future. Now watch this. It gets better. It gets better. Chazal osim ma'amatz nikar limtzo tevua shezman hebashlosa kibar bepesach v'shalta kibar bepesach u'bekach mashlimin es hatmuna shel chag ha'aviv. You're right. In reality, is Pesach the real agricultural season? No, that's really Shavuos. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes out of his way to find an agricultural event that does occur in Pesach in order to juxtapose these two events. Shepherding, the past, agriculture, the future. HaTor Shebal Peh Matziga Kan Dagam Efshari L'Shimor HaZikar HaLe'umi HaEstori Toch Kiyum Dialogue Amitz Im Meguvan HaZavios HaNirkamos Bechevra HaChshavios. So amazing, what does Rabbi Bigman say? So now we have a totally new understanding. The Torah is trying to create a dialogue, is trying to create a harmony between what? Between our past and between our future. So Pesach, on one hand, again, represents the Yom Tov of the shepherds, represents the past, which that's the truth. If you think about what we celebrate on Yom Tov, what we celebrate on Yom Tov is what? Is our past, is the past accomplishes. Even though we say Chayv Adam Liros is Atzmo, we do that through the prism of the past. But we juxtapose immediately, Mimacharas HaShabbos, on the day after, what do? We juxtapose the future. We juxtapose the future. Now, in reality then, according to Rabbi Bigman, something amazing comes out. So what's the role of the Sphira? So what's the role of the Count? What's the role of the Count? Sorry? What? I'm sorry? It's the present, or to say a little bit differently, it's using the present to bridge the past to the future. You see, the real future is where? From the agricultural perspective. The real future is where? It's Shavuos. Because that's the real agricultural yield is there. Right? So you have Pesach, which is my past. You have Shavuos, which is our future agriculture, and you have the sphere now that goes ahead and bridges through counting, through the present, through counting each and every day of the present, I create my bridge between the past and between the future. But in order that we understand what it is that we are creating a bridge towards, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? On the second day of Pesach, what does He provide us with? A snapshot of the future. And what's the snapshot of the future? Not the counting, the Karban. The Karban HaOmer. The Karban HaOmer now becomes, you see how amazing this is? So you have Pesach, again, I know I'm being repetitive, but I think it's so profound. Right? So you have Pesach, which represents the Yom Tov of the shepherds, the past, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I want to tell you what you're transitioning towards. Karban HaOmer, bring the Karban HaOmer. Why? Why? Because it's the beginning, the way beginning of the agricultural yield. Your future is in the land. Your future is to settle down. You're no longer going to be nomad. That you needed that for one period of years, but now you're going to settle down. You're going to be a people. Karban HaOmer. But we're not really. Then the sphere comes along and says, okay, now we're going to transition. Now we're going to count day after day. We're going to transition. Because remember, dramatic change from shepherding to agriculture can't occur in a day. You need to take your time to transition to this new way of life, and that becomes the sphere. Beautiful insight. But I think what we could do is we could globalize this concept. And we could now bring perhaps agriculture and Sefer HaChinuch and Chizkuni and all this Yitzchak, and could bring everybody together. That if we use Rav Bigman's model, what's the essence of Sefira, right? If we go with this idea, remember, shepherding and agriculture don't just have to mean shepherding and agriculture. What does it mean? It means that life changes. That's the ultimate message of Sefira. You see, the amazing part is We often don't like to acknowledge it, but change is an inevitable part of existence. So some of us fight it tooth and nail. Some of us just gladly accept it, or some of us just resign ourselves to it. But whether you fight it, accept it, resign yourself, there's one inescapable truth, which is it's going to happen. Change will always happen. It's just a question of how you choose to relate to that particular change. And in reality, every single day brings with it change. You know, there's some change that's gradual, but every day brings change on the most basic level. We're not the same people today that we were yesterday. And by the way, whether that's better or whether that's worse, that's up to us. But that is an inescapable truth. In reality, although we think there is, there's no such thing as status quo in life. You're always moving somewhere. So every day brings with it some element of change. Sometimes dramatic change, sometimes nuanced change, but change nevertheless. And the reality is that perhaps that's the essence of Sfira. That ultimately, we have Pesach, which represents our historical past of shepherding. You have Shavuos, which represents our future of agriculture. And you have the Sfira, which represents the bridge of that change. And then you have the choice during those days to how you're going to acclimate yourself to that change. So the truth is, you could fill in the blanks with whatever you want. Take out shepherding and put in youth, and take out agriculture and put in old age. And Sfira Sa'omer represents all the periods in between. A person could choose to age gracefully. A person could choose to fight it tooth and nail and ignore the realities. A person could look at the opportunities that a new chapter in life has brought them. Or they could choose to, again, combat it with all of their... Whatever it is in life, whatever life change it is, Pesach, Shavuos, Sfira gives us a model for how to deal with change. One thing is for sure. The future will not look like the past. That's a given. How dramatically different it is different for us as individuals, and certainly we don't never know what that holds for us as a people. And Sfira again represents that journey between the past and between the future. And now we're going to bring in the Sefer HaChinuch. So if Sfira Sa'omer is all about the reality, so the take-home message of Sfira is what? Life changes. Life changes. And you best accept that reality and figure out how you're going to change along with life's changes. Sfira teaches us, accept the reality that your future will not look like your past. And sometimes that's good, sometimes it's not so good. But either way, it's an inescapable reality. And Sfira is the time where we contemplate what our past looked like, we hope what our future is going to look like, and we build that all in our present. But here's the amazing chab. If life is truly constantly changing, if every day is filled with so much uncertainty, if we don't know what to expect, but we know that something is going to change, how do you deal with that uncertainty in life? How do you deal with it? Right? So what do you look for? What do you look for? You could draw on past experience. Everybody needs an anchor. You always need an anchor in life. You need something that is always going to anchor you in existence. The one thing that could be a constant. So people will say, oh, I rely on my family's my anchor. Why doesn't that work? You don't know how long you're going to have your family. Hey, yes, they're a wonderful support anchor, but you could... Okay, yes, lean on them, rely... Not a constant. I'm going to rely on my friends. All wonderful things, but you have to find the constant in life. And this is where the Sefer HaChinuch comes in. Because ultimately, yes, the future is agriculture in this model. But according to the Sefer HaChinuch, what was the future? The future was Torah. The future was Torah. Because perhaps part of the message the Sefer HaChinuch was trying to impart to us is that you want to know how to weather the uncertainties and changes that are part and parcel of the fabric in life. Develop a meaningful relationship with God. Steep yourself somehow in Torah. And for all of us, that means different things. For some of us, it may mean increasing our learning. For some of us, it may mean increasing our chesed. For some of us, it may mean increasing our... Whatever it means. But if life is filled with all of this uncertainty, if the future is guaranteed to look almost nothing like the past, then I need my life anchor. And that's where the Sefer HaChinuch comes in. The life anchor is Shavuos. The life anchor is Kabbalah Satura. The life anchor is relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, because there's one thing that's amazing. No matter what happens in my life, God is a constant. How I perceive Him, how I understand Him, how I feel He's dealing with me, that may change over time. But His existence and His place in my life can be a constant that can help to stabilize so much of the unknown, so much of the ever-changing aspect of life. So we see very beautifully that if we adopt Rav Bigman's model, we could essentially incorporate everything into understanding the Sefirah. Is the Sefirah Saomer about agriculture? Is it? Yes, it is. Because the agriculture serves as our springboard, as our jumping off point to understand. The agriculture helps us understand that the past looked like shepherding and the future is going to be agriculture. And we know change is going to occur, and we have to use the days of Sfira in order to go ahead and figure out how we're going to contemplate, how we're going to react to that particular change. Does the Sfira have to do with Kabbalah Satorah? Absolutely. Because now if you morph Torah with, if you go ahead and you merge the Torah idea of the Sefer HaChinuch with the agriculture of the Toldos Yitzchak, of the Chizkuni, of Rav Big, you see something amazing. The agriculture is used to teach us about the model of change. But the Torah, the counting down to Kabbalah Satorah, why do we count down to it? Because it's almost like the life preserver in the distance. It's like I'm in flux. I know that I'm counting towards a future that is yet to be determined, but I know it's going to look different than my past. So where does my koach come from? Where does my strength come from? Where does my chizuk come from? Where does stabilization in life come from? And it comes from Torah. It comes from relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The really one and only thing in this world, in this life, that actually is something that we can bank on to be there day in and day out. So the reality is, we emerge just with a brand new appreciation of Sefirah. That really what we're counting is not simply towards Shavuos, or not simply towards Kabbalah Satorah. What we're counting down to is a new future. What it's going to look like, how it's going to take form, what's going to occur in it, that has yet to be seen. And while that might cause us a little bit of butterflies in our stomachs, not knowing what the future is going to bring, knowing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the ultimate tool of stabilization, a relationship with Him, a Torah, should give us the incredible confidence to approach the change in life with an incredible sense of zerizos, of excitement, to approach every single day of the year, even though we don't know what's going to unfold, but to know that everything we need to stabilize the change in our life is truly within reach. All right, we'll stop over here. Emir Tz Hashem, next week we'll continue again with Sefirah Saomer.